in here. So today, this talk is the Onion report from the TOR project, TOR not being the science fiction publisher, but the Onion router. So those of you who are here for the science fiction talk, you're at the wrong con. So this is the state of TOR. TOR is wonderful because it is one of the very few technologies that we have for protecting metadata, but it is fragile and complicated and has some great interesting technical issues in it. And this is the Onion report on the state of TOR. So we have three speakers in this session. ASN, who I am told also will answer to George, David Goulet, and Nima Fatemi, who will be giving us the Onion report. But first, Aaron Clark, also with the TOR project, has a quick announcement of another event that'll be happening after this talk. So.
Oops. All right, thank you, Matt. Hello, everyone. I'm Aaron Clark. I am a long-term TOR person. For 5 years, I developed the TOR browser, and now I work at First Look as a security engineer, primarily working with the Snowden Archive. But I am here today to announce that a statement that I did not memorize in advance, which is that I care a lot about this community. And as many of you know, it's experienced quite a large upheaval recently, a lot of turmoil. And our executive director, Sherry Steele, made an announcement about it on the blog. And so you can read the details there. But at this panel, we are they will be discussing basically all of the exciting technical stuff that's happening in TOR. We don't think that this is the appropriate place for Q&A about recent events. However, we are dedicated to trying to further unearth and surface and try to find some reconciliation about all of these problems that we've been having. So at 5 p.m. in the Budapest room on the 6th floor, we are holding an event for people who want to come and talk basically about everything that's been going on, not in a salacious gossip way, but rather what permitted these events to occur, what permitted them to be surfaced, and how can we fix this going forward. And so it will be a moderated talk. I'm one of the moderators. Matt Blaze is going to be one of the moderators in the second hours. Also, Dave Goulet and Biela Coleman, who's a new member of the board of directors. And so that's at 5 p.m., Budapest, 6th floor. We hope to see you there. Thank you. And now, my beloved developers.
All right. Hello, everyone. So we had a quite an interesting 7 months since 2015. So we're gonna report on everything that's happened. You know, that is fun and useful to know. So we'll start, of course, TOR project. So this is a common slide. I'm guessing everyone is comfortable or know TOR, but this slide is useful. So we're an online privacy anonymity. We are free and open source. It's an open network, which means anyone can run a relay and join the network and participate and provide bandwidth. We have a huge, we have a slide that's gonna show that, but we have a very diverse community of researchers, developers, users, relay operators, bridge operators, grad students, and so on and so forth. It's pretty huge. So we're gonna show that to you. Of course, nonprofit organization in the US, 501c3, whatever that means. All right. The new HQ in Seattle. So one thing that was very exciting up in this year, we were in Boston before, and now we are in Seattle. So yes, we had an office in Boston. I believe it was in Cambridge, something like that. And now it's in some Seattle. We have nice pictures with some hearts and going on. It's pretty neat. We have also an Onion space in Berlin. So this is a place where anyone, if you're in Berlin, anyone can go, enjoy, talk to either TOR developers, TOR operators, people of the community, people like you, and just enjoy this place. Yes, I'm gonna go, right, go, sorry. All right, crowdfunding. So, of course, one of the things that we are working really hard is to get funding that is diversifying your funding. So One of the things we did in 2015, it was a huge success, is a crowdfunding thing. So we got more than $200,000 from 5,000 different individual donors. And we're going to do a new one soon. It's working really well. That was like, you know, kind of a tryout, kind of tester things. And it's fine. So we're going to have a new platform. And this is very important because the next bullet point there is government funding, which is a problem for us. Right now, we rely heavily on a government funding, especially US government funding. It helps us do our work. I think we do great work, as you're going to see today. But it also influences, unfortunately, our priorities. Just to be clear, it influences our priorities. It doesn't mean we are doing bad thing in Tor. We don't do, it's all open source. We don't do backdoors, no, never, never. So other stuff also happened. Mozilla gave us a grant. We're going to talk a bit about this. DuckDuckGo and RFF and so on and so forth. Also Reddit last year gave us some money. So it's going well. But again, this government funding, we need to try to diversify this. So an announcement happened like a week and a half ago. We have a new board of directors. So the entire board resigned. And we now have six new great members right now. Gabriella Coleman, Matt Blaze, Cindy Cohen, Linus Nordberg, of course, Bruce Schneier, and Megan Price. So this is currently our new board. They started, I think, a week and a half ago, 2 weeks. So we expect it's going to be quite epic, and maybe a new board member might come in after a while. So now, a word about the ecosystem of Tor. As you know, this is a pretty big thing. So first of all, we have core members. And by core members, we basically mean people that get money out of it. So board members don't get paid, but employees and contractors, they do get paid. So we have around 8 employees, 12 contractors. So it's a thing of 20 people that, you know, get money to make Tor better. So it's pretty nice that we are able to actually pay people to do great stuff. I mean, Tor is great. There's so many challenges. And really, really proud about this. Now, this other layer, and yes, it's going to go like an onion. we have so many volunteers. And the 40 volunteers right there, I just want to make a small, quick point. Those are people that are on RC, that are on our public mailing list, on our internal mailing list. And they just do work for Tor on their own time. And they do amazing amount of work. And this is great. This is people like you in this room and people around the world that do that just we couldn't make it happen. Tor couldn't happen without those people, because those 20 people that get paid, it's absolutely not enough. One of the fun statistics is 160 unique contributors in Little T-Tor, and we call Little T-Tor, which is the Tor daemon, the Tor thing that you run on your computer. So which is pretty huge. This is a big thing. Huge amount of R&D, of course, grad students, 20 more professors. And this is why Tor actually thrives in the anonymity, and we're really good at it. We think we're really good at it. It's because we have a lot of researchers around the world in different universities. And finally, of course, most important thing, this can't happen without relay operators. 7,000 relay operators right now, 3,000 bridge operators. We have some more details of what a bridge is. 50 more projects, different projects about related to Tor, and 2 million users. So it's pretty great, it's pretty huge, and it's people like you that does make it happen. So George is going to talk about the network.
So apart from the ecosystem of humans that was just presented, Tor is a network of computers through which you bound to become anonymous. So those thousands of computers that are run by volunteers around the world is an extremely crucial part of Tor. So in this graph, you can see the number of relays. Relays are the computers of Tor through which your traffic bounces, basically. You can see it through the years. You can see that, like, 2012, we had 2,000 relays. And now we have gone up to, like, 7,000 relays. This is definitely a growing community. And it's a pretty intense community building project, because to build all these volunteers and for them to be so dedicated, it takes a lot of time and effort to bring Tor out there. And the next slide, which is even more important than the number of computers themselves, is how much traffic the Tor network can actually push. And you can see that here the increase is even more. So like 2012, the Tor network could push in total 20 gigabit, which is some traffic for sure. But now, we basically the Tor network has capacity of 200 gigabit, which is 10 times improved, and it's a much more mature network, let's say. The purple line is an estimate of how much the traffic is used. You can see it's 75 gigabit used, but we're never sure if this statistic is exactly accurate. So, although even though I told you that it's actually like a growing community, it's extremely important to for it to become more diverse. That is, currently these 7,000 computers are mostly situated in Europe and the US, the Western world, and whereas that it is definitely great, but we should try to centralize less and actually get relays running all around the world, even in places with not Five Eyes countries, or in countries that have different. More diverse, like Russia, Asia, South America. For example, like OVH, the provider, the VPS provider, has a big percentage of the network, and people keep on like building relays there, whereas they should try to explore other hosting providers. There are some pages in our wiki called Good and Bad ISPs where people have tried to they have documented their experience with different ISPs and how they handle Tor. And it's nice that people experiment with this, and it would be nice to get more feedback and input on which ISPs are friendly to Tor, basically. And now we move to the next subject.
Sure. So while Tor is awesome and everyone loves it, of course, I'm not biased, not everyone has the luxury to connect to the Tor network. A lot of people, millions of users, are being blocked from the network. Here is a study that we can do on the metrics website that if you just look at the metrics, you can see there is a significant drop in the number of direct connections to the Tor network in UAE around April of 2016. I'm not a social scientist, so I leave it to them to realize what was happening there. But what's interesting is that you can see at the very same time, there is a significant increase of the number of bridge users. So there are two ways for places to block connections to Tor network. Type one is to basically they just block access to Tor website, and you cannot download Tor browser, so you can access anything over Tor. Which for this thing, we have a service called GetTor, and you can send an email to or an IM over XMPP Jabber to gettor at torproject.org, and it basically sends you links to mirrors of whatever you want, like OS X, Linux, Windows, whatever. Or you can send a DM to this Twitter account, and it basically just sends you all the mirror links. The other type is that when they try to block the connection to the Tor network, this usually happens when they do DPI like Iran and China, and or they do block the whole list of relays, because the list of relays is being published and it's accessible by anyone. They can just basically block all the IPs and ports, and there are other various ways that they block connection to our network. So for that thing, we have pluggable transports, which basically they obfuscate the traffic and the encrypted traffic, and they make it look like garbage traffic, but it actually is encrypted traffic to Tor network. And it also takes advantage of various different protocols, WebRTC is one of the things that people are working on, and or front domaining that it looks like you're connecting to some major CDN, but you're actually connecting to Tor network. And the other thing that I like about pluggable transports is that it's basically independent from Tor, the software. So you can have these pluggable transports and attach them on VPN or on any other tools that you have, that you can basically obfuscate the traffic to your VPN. So if, for example, you're in Iran or China, or and VPN connections are being blocked, you can basically use pluggable transports to connect to your VPN server. You can find a lot more information on this address. We have a wiki page of all the communities that are basically working on this. It's much, much broader than Tor. There are various other organizations and groups working on this, especially those who are active in circumvention technologies. And we would love to, you know, for you to join us, give us more ideas, other transports that we can use, and other ways that we can bypass censorship.
All right. So one other thing that happened in last year is that we tried to organize a bit more Tor projects. So there's so many people, so many volunteers. So we created some different themes. So we're going to present the five different teams that exist. So the network development team is basically, yeah, the Malocasters of the network, Tor network, which is basically working on everything that touches the network. So any bytes that goes in, basically the Tor daemon, the core Tor, and some pluggable transport as well. So one of the great things coming up is better crypto. Yes, we won that. So we have an ED25519 and SHA-3. And this is actually implemented. So right now you're using Tor. Every link between relays, between clients is using way better cryptography than RSA-124 used to be. This is another big thing. So this is why we have this nice images, because it's a huge engineering effort for us. So it's a complex construction of different things. We have a talk tomorrow at noon on the other room there that is going to be only about this amazing, great new thing, the next generation onion service. Just to be clear, onion service used to be called hidden services. So hidden services, onion service, same thing. The pluggable transports. So Nima told us a bit about pluggable transports. This is a thing that network team is working quite a bit. We have full grants to do new ones. One of the major main pluggable transport is called UPS4. And it's been used. It's a great one. I'm not sure if it's been blocked in China yet. Maybe not. They're pretty good at blocking. But we're coming up with a new one, which is going to be called Basket 2. I don't remember why the 2 is there, but it's called Basket 2, and apparently it's super great. And this guy called Yawning, is a Tor developer, is amazing and does crazy, crazy pluggable transport stuff. I think this is the last one for network. So another thing has been very important is DDoS defense. One of the things the Tor relies on is called directory authorities. So basically, I'm going to go fast on this. It's 9 trusted computers around the world. I think it's 8 now, sorry. 8 trusted computers around the world. They create a consensus. Every relays, every client take the consensus. The consensus is a view of the network, where you can connect, where you can go. And those gets attacked sometimes. Not only those, but relays or even hidden services. So in this case, we implemented this fallback directory authority. So if you're gonna, in Iran, for instance, and they block all directory authorities IP, because those IPs are hard-coded in the code, well, you can't get the consensus. So we have this list now, which is a fallback thing, where every client's gonna connect to one of the fallbacks and get the consensus. And when you get a consensus, at least now you can create a Tor circuit and get to the directory authority. It's a bit technical, but it's something we worked quite a bit on it. Application team.
Okay, so the network team that you just saw is basically the team which builds the software that powers the network. It's the relays, the clients, all of them run this thing. However, application team is the team that prepares software that our users run. So you, as the users, when you download Tor, you are faced with the Tor browser. It's basically this thing you see on the right side, which is a fork of Firefox, specially modified to provide better security and privacy. It basically uses Tor by default. You can see the onion there on the top left corner. It's the indicator. And basically, anything you visit through this browser, it goes over Tor and you're anonymous. This is the solution we have for our users so that everyone can basically use it and you don't need to make your own Firefox and like configure SOX proxies and shit like that. So this is the Tor browser. It's basically the main effort of the application team. It requires lots of work to fork Firefox, believe me. And I'm gonna tell you a few things about what is currently being being researched and done. The application team is quite busy with porting Tor browser to the mobile, so that we have a unified experience between the desktop and the mobile. They're also working on like advanced security features, like self-rando. They did a blog post recently about this. It's basically a binary protection feature, like ASLR, but a bit smarter, and it basically tries to randomize memory so that you cannot build exploits so easily. There is a blog post about this in blog.torproject.org. You should go and read it. There is also work being done on sandboxing and like research on the sandbox of Firefox and whether it can be used for Tor browser and all that stuff. And they actually also have a big team of usability researchers that actually look at Tor browser and they do UX studies with people and stuff, and they provide to the application team feedback on how Tor browser can be improved. And through the next months, I think you will see lots of this input being incorporated in Tor browser. But that's not the only thing that the application team does. Nice logo. And for example, we have two other software, like Torberdy, which is a fork of Thunderbird, and it's basically an email client that uses Tor by default. And you should run it. It's on the website. You can find it, download it, double click, and it should work for you. And Tor Messenger, which is basically a chat application through which you can do XMPP and other protocols like and OTR and stuff like that over Tor by default. You should go to the website and check them out. Okay.
So another initiative that we started at Tor is that we've always been worried about UX, but like not very organizational, and also doing UX in free and open source software is really difficult. So we have a lot of challenges, unique challenges at Tor, and one of them is that we basically make a software that makes it very difficult, and its goal is basically to make it very difficult for anyone to understand what you're doing online and how you're doing it. So we cannot like collect any measurements and metrics to see how users are using it to see what are the failure points and whatnot. So it makes it very difficult and very interesting challenge. But we are working on it, and we are doing this by collaborating with a lot of usable security researchers around the world, basically in different universities and open source designers and whatnot. And they are running like basically a bunch of user studies, as George mentioned, and we are also working on a style guideline for Tor and how you basically use the Tor logo and whatnot. And this slide that is having like some theme and everything is like one of the outcome of that. So a lot of things are happening on that front, but we are still looking for more UX people. UX experts from other, you know, like if you have any experience and knowledge in this area, please join us and let us know. Everything we do is open and public. So a couple of very nice things that we did with collaboration with Tor Browser team is the new changes in Tor browser. One of them is the security slider. If you can, if you go to your Tor browser, click on the onion logo, and click on privacy and security setting, you can have this slider that basically you set your security level. If you're paranoid, you put it on high, and like most of the things don't work. But also, you're far less vulnerable than other people. It basically limits the attack surface. And then there is this nice Tor circuit info that basically shows what path you are taking on Tor network. The other thing that I'm very excited about is the community team. They have been working on various important documents such as social contract and membership guideline etc. And also, like, this team is part of the team that does the outreach for Tor to teach other people about, like, what are the things that you're working on and what are the values of anonymity and online privacy and whatnot. And a big part of it is Library Freedom Project, which I'm also honored to be part of. We go to different libraries across the country and outside the country and teach them about online privacy, how they can protect themselves using encryption from surveillance or any other threats online. And one of the things we do, we run Tor exit nodes in different libraries. And I don't know if you might have heard that, like, DHS tried to, like, we ran it in one of the libraries. DHS tried to shut it down. The library eventually won the fight, and then they put it back online. So it created a little bit of fuzz. Yeah, and the other thing is, like, they are working on pursuing different ways to support the Tor users and community. Oh, you might have noticed that thing. So one of the important thing that I think Tor community is trying to do is to reach out to people who run websites and services to let them know that if they are accidentally blocking Tor users by using some CDNs, I'm not naming names. But yeah, if you run a website and you're using one of those CDNs, please make sure that you unblock Tor users because they are unfortunately blocking Tor users by default. Measurements.
All right, last team, measurements team. So they have a very difficult job because an anonymity network where by design we don't know what's going on, it's kind of difficult to measure or understand anything. So one of the things that happened this year is that Mozilla granted this great amount of money to the metric team. And this is great because for one of the first time in the history of Tor, we have someone plus another person working full-time on metrics. And if you don't know metrics, all the graph we saw come from this great site, metrics.torproject.org. So there's not much fancy stuff we can show you because this money is being used right now to revamp the whole system, we collect data, how we store it, how we analyze it, and so on and so forth. This is very important because those statistics allows us to understand, improve the network. One of the graphs they created recently is this new one. Maybe it's not that exciting, but for us it's extremely great. Those are probable transport per country. So here you can see in Iran which user is using what. Since we don't know because pluggable transport don't say, oh yeah, George is connecting to me, so I'm going to report it to metrics. We don't do that. It's safe metrics, of course. So this is why there's like a range in those lines, because we estimate the amount, the number of users that are using Opsprosky 4, Opsprosky 3, or Meek. And this Meek thing is not a great thing, but we're not going to this. And then, Oni.
Okay, so another project of Tor is UNI, the Open Observatory of Network Interference. It's basically, in common words, it's a censorship detection, which you can basically run from your network, and it will conduct some tests, and then it will send back to the UNI headquarters, like a report of the test and whether there was censorship or not. The UNI project has been doing this for years, and they have currently collected 12 million measurements and from all around the world, basically, in various tests, like HTTP, DNS. They have tests on whether Tor is blocked. They have tests on whether the bridges is blocked. It's still a very actively developed project. You can check the website and everything. Their current approach is that they give Raspberry Pis to people, and they take them to their exotic countries, they plug them onto the wall in an Ethernet, and then this thing sends reports back to UNI on whether the network was disturbed in some way. And then this is graphed afterwards and analyzed by the UNI people. So now We're going to, the ecosystem of Tor has many, many side projects and people that work on 300 things at the same time, and they have like 50 side projects and stuff like that. So there are many, many things going on. We're going to show you just a few projects that we consider worthwhile and interesting at the current stage, let's say. First of all, Orbot is basically our solution, our current solution for Tor on Android. So if you have a mobile phone, you're probably using Orbot to connect to the internet. Orbot is like Tor, and then you have Orfox, which is like Tor browser, but for Android. And they've been doing lots of great work. They've been doing work on how to improve the Tor protocol in unstable networks like mobile. They've been doing lots of experiments. For example, Nathan from the Guardian project recently posted like a way to use your mobile phone and to do Internet of Things over hidden services, which is definitely a very interesting use case of hidden services. And it's a very worthwhile project in general. Okay, then we have Amia. Amia is basically a search engine for onion services. The way I look at this is that basically you have onion services that have been attracting so much bad press because, I don't know, people set up their sketchy websites and then people are like, oh my God, look at this sketchy website, and it generates news buzz, and then journalists just hang on it and they're like, ah, okay, it's the dark web and onion services is like the worst thing ever and stuff. But in my opinion, like there are so many social positive use cases of onion services that never get up to the surface because you just don't know where to find it. Like it can enable blogs, forums, all these things that most people of us don't know where to find in onion services just because we have not dug deep enough into it. And this Amia search engine basically tries to collect a list of hidden services and index them, and then you can just type, I don't know, Iranian blog on Amia, and it will give you the blogs it has in its database. It's still very early in development, so it does not work as nicely as I just said, but in general, it's a very worthy cause, and we should really work on bubbling the good content of hidden services to the surface instead of keeping it hidden in the dark web. So okay, the last recent interesting project is the Tor Relay Awards, which is basically a website that crawls the Tor network and collects a list of relays, and then it assigns them badges and achievements and like ranks and stuff based on what was their uptime, how long they've been out there, if they are situated in an exotic location with not many other relays, if they have lots of bandwidth. So you can see that like Onyx there is the champion right now. So it has all these badges. For example, that red badge that says 1% is like you have more than 1% exit probability, and it gives you some points for this. And in general, it's a very fun way to gamify the whole set up relays thing. And I mean, I can see it being used in various like contests and other ways to motivate people to run relays and help the network. It's www.relayawards.com, and the talk is done.
That was a big show of something.
Ask people to use the mic. People, please use the mic for any questions you might have.
Oh, hello. Thank you. Thank you so much for all the amazing work you do. You guys are incredible. But my question, that's definitely deserves a round of applause. My question is something that you mentioned in one of the very first slides about diversity, and I know that it's difficult to get a diverse set of relays, but how do you feel about kind of the diversity in anonymity networks and censorship-resistant networks? Do you feel like Tor is a potentially dangerous monoculture where it's the only good one that everyone uses, or do you feel like it's important that there be other alternatives? For instance, if the Tor project vanished tomorrow, would there still be robust alternatives that people could turn to, like I2P or Freenet and things like that? Is that also, do you guys think about that sort of diversity as well?
So yes, one of the very important thing about any project, any research, is diversity in terms of multiple people working on it, finding different solutions or adjusting solution and basically shifting paradigms in all this science. So Tor is, anonymity comes from the fact that there's a lot of users. You can't be anonymous alone. So in this case, something like I2P or Freenet or GNUnet and so on and so forth, it is very useful it's there because it increase and improve the state of the art in anonymity. And then we can exchange, we can collaborate, and we can also link the two networks together. So yes, it is a good idea. It's a really good thing. We think about it, but unfortunately, we don't collaborate much with any other network. Lack of time, lack of motivation. Sometimes I don't know, but it's absolutely very important that a lot of people do it.
Yeah, can I add something to that? So the thing that I love about Tor is that a lot of people, a lot of researchers outside Tor are working on it, and I don't think there is any other technology that is getting that much attention in research community. Maybe that would be a good question for them to put like some work on the other stuff. And the other thing that I love about it is that it's not a centralized system, so it cannot vanish tomorrow. Like if Tor project vanishes, we can just get together and run a new Tor network. It's not dependent on the organization. It's dependent on the people who are running the network, and there's like about 10,000 people who are, you know, participating in this thing. So I don't think that it's going to vanish anyway.
Thank you. I have a slightly technical question. When you resize the Tor browser window, it gives you there's a possible fingerprinting attack based on the size of the window. But my question is, with Orbot, because you have so many different types of Android devices, isn't that another avenue for fingerprinting? And why wouldn't you draw similar warnings, or does that warning even matter? And I'm wondering that for Orbot users, this is not a good thing. So, for example, I don't tell people to run Android or Orbot on Android because I think this is an avenue to de-anonymize people. Or maybe I'm just misunderstanding the point of that warning.
I see. You mean as a linkability fingerprint, the size of the screen of the mobile phone?
Yes.
I don't think it's directly de-anonymizing, but I can see what
you
mean.
With fingerprinting, yeah.
Yeah. I actually don't know what is Orbot doing in this regard. I don't know if you can spoof it in other ways. I don't know. I really don't know. I think you. Do you guys know?
No.
Yeah, unfortunately, none of us are actually Android developers, so you should probably ask Guardian Project. But what I know is that Guardian Project is very closely working with the Tor browser team to get all the everything that they've learned during developing Tor browser to actually put it in a Tor browser for Android. So Orbot right now is just a Tor it's just a Tor daemon. It's not the Tor browser. So they are working on a browser that would be the Tor browser for Android, but it's yet to come.
Cool. Thanks.
Hi, I'm John Draper, Captain Crunch. I'll be downstairs in the hardware area in the mezzanine selling Anana boxes. These are Tor routers, and some of the money that the people at the Anana box have been give going to the Tor community as well. I was the one that spearheaded that when I was in Berlin at the Tor Developer Conference. So I'll be downstairs autographing Anana boxes after 6 p.m. in the hardware area. So come down there and see me.
Great question. Hi, I have a question on the same topic, especially since Kickstarter and crowdfunding became a thing. There seems to be a lot of every week there's a new box promise, seems to be like a plug and play router that you can use to route all your traffic over Tor, and the majority of them don't even like release their source code or are probably highly insecure. What do you think Tor's responsibility as a project is? When it comes to like educating consumers about those types of products. My other question is, are there any products like that that you actually do endorse? And then also your thoughts on the Freedom Box project.
So To my knowledge, I don't know. I don't think we have any project that we endorse in terms of hardware at a run store because there's a lot of issues with those kind of boxes that comes out because just using Tor, just relaying all the traffic on Tor is actually not enough in many ways. So all those magic boxes that promise anonymity can be dangerous. It can be good also, but in most cases, to my knowledge, we get an email from the project saying like, hey guys, we did that, can you read this blog post and then can you endorse us? And it takes quite a bit of resources to actually analyze, see this thing is going on and so on and so forth. So if we get resources to be able to do this kind of work with hardware, it would be extremely good, I think. And we could get some boxes that are get endorsed by Tor, really well done, made research and so on and so forth, but we unfortunately don't have this money right now.
Yeah, and I think like everybody loves the idea of having this like little box like on a Raspberry Pi or something that like you just run a Tor on it and then you know like over Ethernet and then give Torify Wi-Fi to all your devices and whatever. But like just like David mentioned, there is a lot of issues like linkability and everything, and it's much more than that. It has to be a lot of like it needs like some dedicated resources to think about those things, especially the security of the boxes. I'm not like very much confident about the especially the kernel issues of these boxes. Yeah.
Thanks.
Hi. Thank you again for the Tor project. It's awesome. I want to know how you find new projects to work with, or do they find you, or how do you do that?
I can try to answer. So over the years, the Tor project is 10, 11 years, something like that, 12 maybe. We have a huge amount of tickets on our tracker that are features and enhancement. And when you think about this thing all day for years, you get some ideas of what should be better. And also, one of the most important thing is that the communities are helping us quite a bit on understanding what are the issues and identifying possible solutions and so on and so forth. Now, in terms of projects, like we saw Amia or whatever, Ricochet, Pond, Onion Share, and so on and so forth, those are people in this room, like you, not us, not Tor developers, that think about those things, that use the Tor as innovative ways to make our world better, safe. So they usually come to us, I would say.
Yeah, it's the beauty of open source projects, right? So like people just like do whatever, like I don't know, like Micah did the Onion Share thing. It was amazing, and you know, you can just think about any project. And if, like, I was a Tor user, and then like I was working on some stuff, and then I became a Tor developer. So it's like you can also become a Tor developer after having an idea. So it's not really, we are trying to be more inclusive rather than exclusive.
Indeed. Are you guys going to be hanging out in a particular area here?
Mezzanine. Yeah.
Around.
Bar.
Okay.
They're also giving a talk tomorrow about onion services. Yeah, you can also find us
there.
Hi, I'm Dick Rocket, and I have a... Why are you laughing? I have a question. First of all, thank you for allowing me to be here. Everybody, hope. This is my first time here. I don't know what the hell I'm doing. Thank you, 3Alarm. And Black Lives Matter, how can your project end racism?
Well, that's a tall order.
Sorry, well, that's offensive.
No, yeah, I think like one of the greatest thing, I think Cypherpunk's, if you've read Cypherpunk's manifesto.
I don't know what that is.
Yeah, like look it up. It's
Google it, they're going to know who I am then.
You can look it up, and like basically we believe that by using encryption we can defend the democracy.
Okay, is that worth defending today? Let's hear it, everybody. Come on, First Amendment is what I'm using right now, right? You too? First Amendment, freedom of speech, correct?
Sure.
I'm dead serious, but why are the millennials trying to take all my Pokemons?
Cool.
Technology's a tool. It's a tool. Sometimes we're tools. Anyway, I just have two quick points. One, in terms of the kind of all-in-one boxes, I think that a lot of people are trying to play with for a long time. A lot of them, I mean, you're not going to encrypt the internet. You're not going to solve every problem. It took Tor years to deal with DNS lookups. There's lots of things that have gone on that are problems that Tor people work on that a lot of these all-in-one boxes are never going to do. And they, to be honest, a lot of them try to do too much. They try to run a public relay and run a hidden service, which you should never do. There's lots of things that go on. So I'd be really, really careful about a lot of these all-in-one wonder boxes out there. On the issue of diversity, I think Georg, whoever brought this up, but it's even worse than just the Five Eyes stuff, because if you look at the distribution of diversity network in terms of countries, it's bad. Actually, there's other things that are a lot worse. I'm actually involved in a project you guys probably know about, the Tor BSD diversity stuff. We're porting Tor browser to OpenBSD. And actually, if you look at network diversity, 90% of the Tor network and bandwidth, of number of relays and the bandwidth, is our Linux-based systems, which means 9 out of 10 of them, at least, are sharing the same random number generator. And a common Linux kernel vulnerability affects 90% of the Tor relays. I mean, that in itself, to me, is a horrific, scary, disturbing thing, because there has been system-wide kernel-based vulnerabilities in the Linux kernel many, 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 many times. So that, to me, is actually a focus that people need to be looking at more and more and more. I'm not just saying go and run an operating system that you're not familiar with as a Tor relay. You shouldn't do that. You know, don't decide tomorrow you're going to start running a Solaris or a Luminos or a FreeBSD or OpenBSD relay. Bad idea. On the other hand, I think a lot more attention does need to be put at looking at operating system diversity and whole numbers of other diversity. Because if you're talking about perfect diversity, you're talking about like every, you know, billions of devices out there that are all running different, everyone's running a different operating system, a different IP, a different AS number, and so on and so forth. But we can't hit that, but that's what you should be aiming towards. And that means actually breaking up as much as we can the network. It means, you know, more relays in Southern Africa, more relays in Eastern Asia, and so on and so forth. So, anyway. Yes.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah. We are mostly Debian people, so if you are like a Unix person, please join our community. And we need more Unix people in general.
Hi. In advance, I apologize for a potentially very dumb question because I'm not a tech person. But in talking about to people about Tor and exploring Tor, I've been really scared away. You know, people tell me it's for really great things, for anonymity and so on, but yet there's that dark web and, you know, a lot of really bad people on it and, you know, be careful. So is there an issue?
When I was internet became a thing when I was a teenager, like 11, 12 years old. And what my parents knew about internet was that it's full of porn and full of bad stuff, and I should never use a computer because they don't know what's happening
same
in there.
Uh-huh.
That's pretty much the same thing about Tor network. Okay. It has all sort of things. Like it's a network. It enables you to have unrestricted access to the internet, to the data. Look at it in a form of a public library. Uh-huh. You walk in a library, you can just pick and grab any kind of books that you want. And nobody's gonna ask you a question like, what kind of book do you read? Why do you read that? How often do you read that?
I don't mean that I'm afraid of information.
No, yeah.
I just meant, am I in any way at risk? Do you know what I mean? Am I exposing myself to some kind of vulnerability?
Frankly speaking, when you use the internet, you are at risk.
Yep.
And
that's true.
Yeah. And like basically by using a lot of the apps that you probably have on your phone and most of us have on our phones, we are exposing ourselves to a lot of vulnerabilities. But what Tor does is that it basically tries to remove some of the attack surface so we can be more secure.
Mm-hmm. Okay, got it.
I wish Tor browser was as secure as Chrome, but it's not, unfortunately. But we are working, like we are moving toward that. But it's the most private browser that you can find. It's you don't have to be worried about like all the shadow profiling, all the advertisement companies tracking your activities, and all the
right.
You know.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sure. Yeah. Sure.
Speaking of Chrome, since you bring it up, now Chromebooks are getting the Google Play Store support, so they can install and use Android apps in a sort of hybrid fashion. So now, I guess, Orbot will be available for Chromebooks. Can you say anything that you know about how secure that would be, or what the features are that moving forward?
Sure. Can I add, say one thing? And so the problem with Chrome in general is that I wish that we could have a Tor browser based on Chrome, and I think a lot of people share the same wish. But the problem is that it's very difficult to remove Google stuff from Chrome. Google is essentially an advertisement company, and whatever they build, it has like, I don't know, like imagine Google Analytics is like 10,000 times worse. And it's like just having Tor on, I don't know what other people think, but I don't think having Orbot on Chromebook would help you from, would save you from Google. Like it depends like on your threat model, I think. You can bypass censorship still, but yeah.
That's it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Depends on your threat model is the answer.
Everything. So,
thanks very much for the from the Tor folks. Oh, they left stickers for me. I'm going to steal their stickers.
All right.